You are now locked into Interconnected Voices.
I had a plan for how I thought my life would go. I didn't expect to come across like such, I guess, severe mental health issues.
Of course.
So although I had planned to work full time from when he was 6, which I did do, I started from when he was 5, life just took over. So I don't think they take into consideration that like shit happens sometimes. With this pandemic going on, a lot of people are going to put themselves in debt to buy food that they can't really afford.
The government's universal credit benefit system.
The universal credit.
It's not just a health emergency for the millions laid off. This is an economic one too.
Her work dried up 2 weeks ago because of coronavirus.
I'm not going to lie, it's quite a stressful experience.
His family have had to turn to the benefit system.
I don't think people call it the benefit trap for a joke. It really does feel like a trap and it's hard to get out of it.
Hello, you're listening to Interconnected Voices. What would Labour do? A special series where we speak to young people about their experience of interacting with our political system and ask them, how might life be different under Labour policy? I'm Charisse, and today we're looking at the benefit system and claiming universal credit. The pandemic has seen work dry up for many people and an unprecedented number of individuals have applied to the welfare system for support. At the start of April 2020, benefit applications were 10 times the normal level. I've had a lot of mixed reviews about universal credit, and considering the amount of people that are about to enter the system due to coronavirus, I really wanted to have a closer look at the system and explore the positives and challenges within it. What is our welfare system and how does it operate? And what aspects of the system are typical of the Conservative government, rather than a Labour one? This is what we're looking at on today's episode of Interconnected Voices. You might have heard a lot of people talking about universal credit. And if you're applying for state support during the coronavirus pandemic, chances are you'll be put on it too. But what is it? Well, it's a benefit that was first introduced by the coalition government in 2012.
Work isn't slavery, it's poverty that's slavery. And let it again be us, the modern, compassionate Conservatives, who lead the fight against poverty in Britain today.
It's for people of a working age and is paid once a month. It was spearheaded by Ian Duncan Smith, or as he's known, IDS.
The benefit system has created pockets of worklessness, real pockets of worklessness across the
country. Idleness has almost become institutionalised in the sense that there is other scope for people to be other than in that state.
And the core philosophy of universal credit is to simplify the welfare system, which it does by merging 6 benefits into one payment. For example, it combines housing benefit and job seekers allowance.
I'm Mike Brewer, I'm chief economist at the Resolution Foundation. It was based on lots of factors and some research, indeed, some of which I did in like 2005, 2006, which showed that the interaction between these different benefit programs really caused claimants problems.
A more dynamic benefit system that responds to people's changing circumstances and through those changing circumstances creates more dynamic and productive people in areas like this.
So the idea was that, yeah, these multiple benefits was confusing for people, makes it hard to see what's going on. And the government thought that by bringing them all together, you start to get rid of some of those problems.
The desire to simplify the welfare system is not specifically a Conservative one. In a report by the Institute for Government, the journalist Nicholas Timmins states that there has always been a high level of cross-party support for the essential idea. I mean, it's not hard to see why. In 2005, it took 169 questions to establish a single parent's right to income support. There is some quite big losers, especially when we look at things like disability benefit. And some of those people, when they moved onto universal credit, saw a reduction of up to $2,200 per year. Why do certain people lose out the way they do when they switch over?
On a really basic point, mm-hmm. If you're going to take 6 different benefits and replace them with one, you're never quite going to get the one benefit to match what everyone was getting through the 6 different benefits.
Right.
So it's like inevitably, you've got to sort of cut a few corners. Some people win, some people lose. When the government first announced universal credit, there should have been more winners than there would have been losers. Then what happened is we had the years of austerity and years of cuts to benefits.
As we've seen throughout reporting on this series, the Conservative policy of austerity has impacted heavily on public services. And this is no different for the welfare system. So while universal credit as a theory enjoyed cross-party support, in reality, it's become a welfare change powered by Conservative cuts that sees many people lose out.
Right, and particularly the kind of the £12 billion a year cut in benefits announced by George Osborne in 2015. And now he announced all those, and then there was a fairly big reaction, fairly big, you know, people not happy with this. And so some of them he just put off. So he didn't cut the existing benefits. Instead, he backloaded the cuts and put them into universal credit. The Resolution Foundation, where I work, we would not support the austerity program that we've seen over the past 5 years. We think that was a mistake. So although we think it was a good idea to introduce universal credit, that doesn't mean you have to introduce it and then try and save money at the same time. And so now it's the case that universal credit, on average, is not as generous as the system it's replacing. And there are going to be more people losing out when they move across than there are people winning. That would include young lone parents, those under 25, they seem to be sort of treated particularly harshly.
Yeah, because we're basically a national insurance number to the universal credit advisors. So they don't get to see the humans, but they just think, oh, this person, they just had a child and didn't really think about how they're going to look after them financially. But life happens, shit happens. I guess life is quite hard, especially if you're coming from poverty. As someone, my mum had 6 girls and she did it mainly alone. And it meant that my sisters, we all had to raise each other in some ways. And because she didn't really have the tools to she did the best she could with what she had. But a lot of what we've had to learn growing up, whether it's about managing our finances, debt and credit, we had to learn all of that the hard way. And so with my 2 younger sisters, we let them know all the mistakes we've made so they don't do it again.
This is Nadine, who I spoke to about her experience of claiming universal credit.
I was working full-time, I was doing an apprenticeship with my own local council, but I had some mental health issues and I had to take sick leave. But then during that time, I was working with a therapist and I came to the conclusion that it was best for me to leave and just get, I guess, mentally better. So the next option, just to make sure I could pay my rent and look after my son, was to go on universal credit. For like when you see it on the tabloids and on the news that all these TV shows that make it out like people just want to sit on benefits and not do anything, I feel like there's not much done to help people transition off of benefits. I don't feel like benefits should be a long-term thing unless you really need it to be. But I feel like there needs to be a lot more support, because financial literacy doesn't just come to people. Most people that are quite good with money, they were either taught it from a young age or they've like been able to be in environments where they had to learn it. So a lot of people that are trying to like better, I guess, the generation that they come from. Like for me, I had to read so many books and watch so many YouTube videos. And like I said, I had a lot of good opportunities like once I met my son, because I did go out and look for them. But it did help that I knew certain people. And not everyone has those, I guess, like those advantages. They don't get the opportunity to be exposed to like, I don't know, to see that there's more out there. Because I don't think people call it the benefit trap for a joke. It really does feel like a trap and it's hard to get out of it.
And the thing is, it kind of, in situations like this, it kind of leads people back into that cycle of going into arrears and having to borrow and then you're in debt. And it's like a constant cycle from the DWP end where it's just like they're trying to help you, but also they're hindering you at the same time if you encounter any difficulty.
I always had part-time jobs from when I had my son. Yeah, and had great opportunities to do training and other great opportunities that helped me develop professionally. But I didn't expect to come across like such, I guess, severe mental health issues. Although I had planned to work full-time from when he was 6, which I did do, I started from when he was 5, life just took over. So I don't think they take into consideration that like shit happens sometimes. So it's just a very hectic time, and I don't think they're mindful of like change. And if they don't want people to be on benefits long term, they don't really make it easy to get off of it. I feel like I've always been a very ambitious person and didn't want to take the normal route of like, oh, I have to do this to get out of poverty and do that to get out of poverty. I still felt like I was entitled to dream. You want your child to do well in school, but you're also trying to provide. So even when I did decide to leave my job, I felt guilty because then I knew that I wanted him to learn an instrument and he was really enjoying piano, but it's too expensive to just do. And it's not something that he needs to do, but it's just like, yeah, I just felt bad that he wouldn't have those opportunities. And it just becomes like, you can't, I don't know, you get to a point where you get sick of like blaming the government, but at the same time, it would be good if they had like a realistic plan and made it, like, I guess they can't make it individual to each family, but what are the people in the job centre for? They just follow this, like, it's sort of like a recipe to keep people on benefits.
I totally agree. And also, if he was to go back to work full time and get childcare, you have to pay for the childcare yourself anyway and claim to get it reimbursed. And in a lot of cases, that can leave households waiting weeks or even months to be paid back by the state. So it's tricky because it's like you put yourself in that predicament and then you just end up getting back in more debt. So then is it easier to just stay at home and then give the time to your son?
As well as talking to Nadine about her feelings on how supportive Universal Credit had been to her and her son, I also asked about the two-child cap. This is a policy that means parents who have a third child receive no benefit for that child or any further children they have. The theory here is that parents receiving benefits should have to make the same financial decisions about having more children as parents who do not receive benefits. But, as Nadine pointed out, life doesn't always work like that.
Some people could afford to have all those children, but like things happen in their life, whether they lose a partner or they can't work or they have a mental health issue and their life just changes. So what they thought they would have financially, they then no longer have anymore. I don't think it's so much about like a cap on children. I feel like there should be, I don't know, something in place where maybe you're allowed to be on benefits for like 3+ years, but you work with your advisor. Instead of your advisor ticking off if you've applied for a job, you actually work with an advisor to think about a long-term plan. And they help you to, I guess, get like to where you want to be financially or like whether it's the living situation. But I think it's hard to like put a cap on things like children because I don't know, that's just not how life works in reality. It might look good on like their papers and like connecting dots with their systems, but it's just not realistic.
All in all, withdrawing support for parents with 3 or more children is really hard to justify. It has pushed more than 300,000 children into poverty.
And I think we're beginning to see now, as more and more families get hit by it, that it's just hitting families, some of whom are, you know, amongst the most disadvantaged in society. I mean, I worked on anti-poverty policies, again, like more than 10 years ago, and we realised that if you had a payment and you gave it just to the families with 3 or more children, it would be really well targeted at reducing poverty. Government's done the opposite. They've taken money away from families with 3 or more children. So that one, you know, it just can't be justified as far as I can see.
This is just one of the policies Labour is pushing to overturn. In many ways, Universal Credit also represents a philosophical change to the welfare system. The Conservatives have put a huge emphasis on employment as the cure to poverty.
Getting people into work is absolutely the number one way to cut the poverty bills and to cut all the other social ills.
However, a UN report in the UK found that despite high levels of employment, large-scale poverty persisted, stating that the government had reduced benefits by every means available, including constant reductions in benefit levels.
I don't think they realise that most people that are on benefits don't want to be on benefits. It's something that you have
on
to
benefits,
do.
It's not caring, not looking after somebody or living a legitimate form of where they can't go to work.
Harsher penalties.
A whole group of society.
And stigmatisation.
Doing nothing.
I have all like these big dreams and stuff, but it's just so easy to get demotivated at times.
In conclusion, the UN report states that the government is conveying a basic message,
just simply taking from society,
that any alternative would be more tolerable than seeking to obtain government benefits.
So I have to do this to get out of poverty and do that to get out of poverty. I still felt like I was entitled to dream.
One of the places the conservative philosophy is most clearly shown is in the sanctions system.
What the Tories have done is stripped away the principles of our welfare state.
Sanctions are when benefit claimants have part or all of their benefit payment taken away.
They said, I quote, food is not a reason that we would provide financial help.
This happens when claimants fail to meet conditions of receiving their benefit, such as attending a job interview or job centre appointment. Sanctions aren't new and existed under our previous Labour government, but the Welfare Reform Act of 2012 made sanctions longer, more severe, and applicable to more people than ever before. When the Work and Pensions Committee conducted a 2018 review into these increased benefit sanctions, they deemed them pointlessly cruel,
Researchers from the University of Liverpool suggest universal credit has negatively affected people's mental health.
Their report also found evidence that sanctions were actually counterproductive to getting people back into work, actively harmed people's mental health, and broke down trust between claimants and the job centre. When people are asked, "How did the sanction affect you?" claimants responded with comments like,
"I was actually depressed. This worsened it. Seriously knocking my confidence. I self-harmed.
I was reduced to 1 meal a day for several weeks and lost a stone and a half. Prior to this, I was already considered dangerously underweight.
It sent my mental and physical health spiralling out of control. I have severe anxiety at the mention of the DWP, or sight of a brown envelope."
All this and more is why Keir Starmer has said he would scrap punitive sanctions and scrap universal credit in favour of a social security system with compassion and justice as its founding principles. To my mind, the Conservatives have created a welfare system that is punitive and stigmatising rather than supportive.
I think the process of universal credit is so demoralising and it can be so humiliating.
This is Harriet Williamson, a journalist and mental health activist. I came across a brilliant article she wrote for Vice, where she candidly spoke about her experience of being on universal credit.
Particularly when you step into that job centre building and there are lots of security staff and you are being followed to your appointment as though you're going to do something wrong. And I really feel that that is very damaging, and it gives you the sense that people don't trust you and they're expecting you to behave badly in some way.
And you mentioned previously and in your article that you felt that the job staff don't really know what they're doing. Just elaborate on that a little bit more for me, because they see so many clients. I find it so hard to believe that they don't really tell you what you was going to earn when you first went to apply.
No, they couldn't. They used an online calculator as well, and they still couldn't tell me for certain how much my benefit was going to be.
What?
Yes, which is just so strange to me, because, you know, that's your job and you should be able to tell people when they come in.
Did they say a reason why?
No, they did not say a reason why. And they also needed my partner to take half a day off work to come in to talk about what he was earning when he could have done that remotely. And, you know, it just really wasn't necessary. But when it was calculated on a household income, I definitely felt like there was some strain on my relationship, because it brought my finances and my partner's finances together in a way that we had not previously agreed to. The idea that I would be relying on him for lots of things like groceries just didn't feel right for me.
When universal credit is paid to a household, it is sent to one earner, someone who's considered the main earner. In a heterosexual relationship, this is more likely to be the male partner. But at best, this removes financial independence from the woman, and at worst, sees women in abusive relationships made more vulnerable.
And it also pushes people who live in domestic violence situations or abusive situations, it forces people to stay in those partnerships because they're tied by a financial bond.
Domestic violence is allowed as a reason for requesting payments to be split between two adults. But to me, this is just another example of a government out of touch with the realities of people's lives. If you're a woman experiencing abuse at home, you face a choice between sacrificing financial independence and declaring that you're experiencing violence, which could potentially put you in a more dangerous situation. It doesn't have to be like this. In Scotland, payments are split automatically. This issue raises an important idea, and that's one about financial independence of vulnerable members of society. According to research by Women's Aid, one in five women interviewed said they couldn't leave an abusive relationship because they had no money of their own. So what if there was a welfare policy that could give people some consistent level of income that they could rely on?
I can see the argument for basic income incrementally developing in that way. So you can see people saying, well, actually, yes, maybe all people should actually have a relative level of income that enables them to have a roof over their heads or prevents them going to food banks, that sort of argument.
There's an idea called universal basic income that has been advocated by some Labour MPs, including current Shadow Work and Pensions MP Jonathan Reynolds. Also known as UBI, Universal Basic Income is a single set payment that all citizens receive. It does not depend on income or employment and is not dependent on meeting a criteria or passing a test. UBI payments would be attached to individuals, regardless of life circumstances or employment status. For women leaving abusive relationships, there would be no endless forms or waiting for benefit payments in order to access financial help and leave their abuser. But the potential benefits are wider than just the scenario. We find ourselves in a changing world where a job for life just isn't as common anymore, and people are far more likely to work in short-term contracts, change professions and go freelance than they were 20 years ago. UBI could give people the freedom to upskill and move between roles and contracts. This policy has the potential to benefit a diverse range of people, both those who come from post-industrial towns that were hit really hard during the recession, and young millennial freelancers. With this in mind, I wondered how much flexibility our current system gives to freelancers, and spoke to Harriet about her experience of claiming Universal Credit as a freelancer.
So, as you just said, it, like when you get paid a freelance payment, it wipes out your Universal Credit. So if you got paid 600 quid, 600 quid will be taken off your Universal Credit payment, basically.
Yeah, that's correct.
That's insane.
It is, isn't it?
How do you ever reap the benefits of your freelance work?
You never do. Unless you earn more than what Universal Credit is paying you, you can never sort of escape the trap of Universal Credit. And unfortunately, with freelance, every month is different. And lots of months are dry months. And then you end up, you know, in a bit of a quandary, really.
Has it ever made you want to stop doing freelancing and just do work that would allow you to have your full payment?
Yes, it does, but I'm in quite a difficult industry. There's not a lot of jobs about. People are getting laid off all the time, and because I suffer with quite serious mental health problems, a full-time job in an office isn't the most suitable thing for me at the moment.
Of course. And according to some research from the Money and Mental Health Policy, it said that Universal Credit is exacerbating claimants' mental health because of the complex process of the Universal Credit system. How do you feel about that statement?
I would completely agree with that. I think Universal Credit is very harmful. When they say things to me like, you're not gainfully employed as a self-employed person, when I'm doing my best to earn as much money as possible, any time you get paid and achieve something, it just gets wiped away from your Universal Credit. So there's no real incentive to go out and get more work because you know that it's just going to be taken off anyway.
So as a freelancer, what are they suggesting to you in these appointments? Like, are they suggesting that you look for permanent full-time work?
Yes, they are. They are. And they don't seem to understand that I've got these three mental health diagnoses and a full-time job. While it would be good for me money-wise, it might be very detrimental for me health-wise. But I had an experience recently where I was working one day in-house for my freelance copywriting job. Mm-hmm. And they sent me an appointment on that day. And I said, I'm really sorry I can't attend. These are the days I'm working. Can you please reschedule something? And they refused to do that.
What?
Yeah, they refused. So I had to lose out on half a day's wages so I could go to this appointment that is supposed to help me get into work when I was actually working on that day, which is, you know, it's not practical and it's not reasonable. And they wouldn't make allowances for that.
Do you feel like the system being so rigid and them having so many rules kind of stops people from, you know, enjoying any freelance work they have? Because that's what it sounds
definitely.
Like.
Yeah, I think it totally takes the enjoyment away. And I came out of that appointment feeling like everything I was doing was not good enough and that I was basically a failure. That's how I felt stigmatized. I felt like I'd failed in the fact that I wasn't getting more money every month than Universal Credit was paying me. And instead of saying like, well done, you've got a part-time job, they told me I'm not gainfully employed.
What does that even mean? I'm not gainfully employed. What do they mean by
I think it means that you don't earn a set amount each month to support yourself,
right?
So I wasn't earning enough money for them.
From my conversations with Nadine and Harriet, the welfare system currently in place seems punitive, demoralising and overly complex, leading plenty of people to fall through the cracks. Although there are kinks that would need to be worked out in UBI as a policy, and trials would have to take place to make sure it was robust, to me, UBI is an interesting policy which could move us away from a demoralising welfare state and towards a supportive system that could help citizens into financial independence, with room for flexibility, growth and the ability to cope with the realities of life. And in terms of, if you're looking at the system as a whole and based on just your personal experience, how do you feel that the system could be improved?
I think the system could be improved with fewer appointments, less focus on forcing you to apply for every job, whether it's suitable or not, because I think that's utterly ridiculous. I think people should be treated so much better and with more respect in job centres and not treated like criminals as they are at the moment, or people who are going to do something wrong. I think from a freelancing perspective, I think that you should be able to earn up until a point which is a living wage, instead of having it wiped away and being left with, as I said, £100 a month to live on. I think that Universal Credit, as this flagship policy, it has just not worked. And it's been such a blatant failure. And it's put people's health at risk. It's put people's lives at risk. You have all these stories about people dying because they've been sanctioned or there's been some glitch and they haven't had their benefits and they've died alone and hungry with no one to help them. And I think that is the sign of a real abject failure of this government.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Interconnected Voices. Follow us on Instagram at interconnected_voices and watch this space for a very special episode of Being Black and British in the UK.
Transmission Roundhouse.